Prisoner Peter Collins is also involved in the Peer Health Project as an educator and counselor. He explains what this means and speaks about Peer Health Project reports submitted to the Bath Institution on November and December 2002. Peter explains why the health videos are not being aired in this penitentiary. Also, he speaks of healthcare or the lack thereof in prisons and how this has affected him as well as other prisoners. You are involved in the Peer Health Project as an educator and counselor. Could you explain what exactly is this project and how you came to be involved?
Sure, I can. The Peer Health Project has its roots in trying to change the direction of the AIDS and the hepatitis C epidemic that's currently ravaging the Canadian prison system. Outside agencies, social activists regarding these issues have been fighting for better harm reduction methods within prisons. So in response, the CSC has come up with a peer health project where prisoners are taught harm reduction techniques and information so that we can try to help people who are living lifestyles that may, you know, present more risks than others, say intravenous drug use or sex or tattooing, that we can try to share with them healthier ways of doing these things, you know, while obviously the CSC is not condoning or encouraging them. In theory, they're supposed to be trying to present ways to reduce the possible harm, the outcome of these deadly diseases.
And how did you become involved?
I became involved because a friend of mine had started taking the course, and he told me about it, and I asked if I could take part in it. And so I guess it's over 2 years ago now, I was allowed to get involved in it, and so we took the six-month course and finished it, and then, in theory, we were supposed to go into practice being able to deliver this information to fellow prisoners, but the reality was that the CSC was, you know, either not really interested in doing it, or they just wanted to appear like they were doing it, and for 2 years after the course, nothing happened in spite of our requests to have the program put online. It never did happen. So I started to write to the Legal AIDS Clinic and PASAN, which is a Prisoners with AIDS Support Network, and HARS, which is HIV and AIDS Regional Services. And all of them work for, you know, people who have these diseases. And PASAN is specifically a Prisoners Support Network. But the other ones work with prisoners who have these problems, but they're not specifically, you know, addressing just prisoners' issues like PASAN is. Anyway, I wrote to them, and I wrote to the commissioner, and I wrote to justice critics and health critics of the current political party, and asked why this project was not being implemented. So I guess in effect, I embarrassed them into starting the project, and so now it's started. But for some reason, the administration here, Ms. Gascon's administration, doesn't want prisoners to be able to come and see me directly at my cell, and she doesn't. There's no mailbox specifically for guys to put requests in. So in actuality, the program, while it's online, isn't really functioning because people aren't allowed to come and see us. They say they're going to build a room for us, but, you know, the government and how quick they are. So right now, the project's working and it's not. You know, it's it looks like it's working, but it's really not. So, well, that's my involvement now, is just keeping on trying to provoke, I guess, the administration to behave ethically and responsibly on this issue.
Also in the Peer Health Project report that was written up in November and December 2002, there were many different concerns in regards to health issues, not just HIV or Hep C, But there was also the situation with elderly prisoners. What recommendations did the Peer Health Project report propose for these prisoners?
Because it's an outdoor institution where people have to go for relatively long walks to go to the medication line or to go to the laundry room or anywhere really, you know, for their food, or they have to go for a long walk. So our suggestion was that they double line the winter coats, because currently our winter coats really aren't winter coats, and they just look like winter coats. They're so thin that they offer not much warmth or insulation from the cold. So you figure with an elderly person or someone who is sick with HIV or full blown AIDS, or and if they're very sick, they need that extra protection. So our recommendation was that they use two coats and sew them together so that they're warmer, and instead of having buttons and zippers, that they put Velcro so that hands that are riddled with arthritis, or you're just too sick to manage with the buttons and stuff, you can do it quickly with the Velcro. And we made those recommendations for shoes as well. I believe we made recommendations for there's certain hygiene supplies that are issued now. I think some kind of shaving equipment, Polident for holding teeth, several items like that, or laundry change, where someone has to bring their dirty laundry or clothes that no longer fit or are worn out, they have to bring it to this department. Our recommendation is that the department have a list and they have somebody deliver those to the person, as opposed to have them walking around in the freezing cold or icy roads.
At the Bath Institution, there is a health video program. What is this exactly, and why is it not presently in use?
Well, we have a library of all kinds of different health videos regarding a wide array of health issues. We used to have a video machine in a prisoner's cell, and it was hooked up to the whole institution. He would put the video in, and it would play on every television set on a certain channel. And we had a Miss Baker, CX keeper, confiscate the video machine for, there was no charges or anything. She had this unreasonable idea that, something bad would happen if we had a video machine. So we lost the ability to show these videos. But they said that they would hook it up into the recreation department and the staff would play it from there. But it's taken them, well over a year to do the hookup. And apparently they say they've got the hookup done, but now they've indicate that they can't find the video machine that they confiscated, that the inmate committee paid for. So that would be one of the reasons why we can't show them. The other reason is that Miss Baker feels that we don't have the viewing license required to show health videos, which I believe is completely unreasonable. The purpose of health videos is to be shown. It's not like it's the Lord of the Rings. You've done a pirate copy of it and you're showing it to people for pay. This is these are health videos. Some of them are even made by prisoners to promote health and harm reduction issues.
I was wondering if you could describe what the health care, or lack thereof, that prisoners receive in general at the Bath Institution, and maybe give some examples if possible.
At the Bath Institution, I've had personal experience with healthcare that wasn't very pleasant, but also I've had occasion as peer health counselor to dialogue with a lot of prisoners regarding the healthcare treatment. And this institution appears to have one of the worst healthcare departments in regard to human interaction than any other penitentiary that I've been in. So I could give a couple of examples. Like people would say that they actually feel worse having gone to healthcare, spoken to a nurse or the doctor about a problem they're having, than if they had of just endured the problem by themselves without asking for help. There's just a problematic approach from healthcare with regard to the treatment of prisoners. When I was in Collins Bay Prison Penitentiary, I had an allergic reaction, and I've had them all my life to certain types of foods or certain combinations of foods. And the doctor gave me Paxil, which he told me was some kind of drug that would help cool the blood so that I wouldn't have this allergic reaction. But what it did was it put me into a sort of almost like a walking comatose state. And when my family came up to visit me, they realized that, you know, I must have been high or, you know, heavily medicated. They realized that I was heavily medicated and told me to stop taking whatever it was and, you know, to call them that night and tell them what medication it was. And they looked up on the internet when I called them and told them, and they found that it was a social anxiety, obsessive compulsive disorder type medication, sort of like the little brother to Prozac. So they looked that up, and apparently it's some kind of serotonin uptake inhibitor. And you require, you know, a chemical imbalance in your brain for this to be an effective medication, and they need to do tests and things. But our prison doctor had put me on double the recommended starting dose for someone who is actually diagnosed as having a serotonin uptake inhibitor problem. So I put a complaint in, and I was called down by a psychiatrist, and I didn't know it was a psychiatrist. I had been waiting to see a doctor about my feet, and I thought that that was the doctor. So when I went into the office, he asked me how long I'd had the problem, and I said, you know, I've had it almost all my life. But after he asked me a couple more questions, I realized this wasn't the foot doctor. I explained the problem to him, and he discontinued Paxil. But the general practitioner doctor ordered blood tests because I guess he was trying to cover his tracks and make it, you know, hoping that I would come back as somebody who needed Paxil. But the tests came back that I didn't need it. So I filed a complaint with the Ontario College of Physicians and Surgeons. And it took like 3 or 4 years for them to whitewash it and say that it was okay. In the meantime, I had been transferred to Bath, but that doctor also got transferred to Bath and works at Bath. And for 3 years, he's refused to see me for any issue. So I'm sort of in a prison, you know, and have no access to health care.
So, Peter, would you like to speak on more of in a broad way? What are the major health issues for prisoners?
Sure. I'd like to talk about a couple of things. I was thinking about a friend of mine who recently had a few troubles with the healthcare at this institution. He had an open sore on his forehead that stayed open for over a year. And during this time, the doctor prescribed a series of antibiotic creams, steroid-based creams, and different creams to treat this sore. And after a year of these different creams, the man's face swelled up one night, and, you know, he woke up, he looked like he had been severely beaten. And this was on a Friday night. They didn't bring him to the hospital, they just put ice on it and let it subside a bit. And on Monday, they brought him to the hospital after the weekend. And the physician who looked at it immediately diagnosed it as skin cancer and set up an emergency operation and tried to remove all the cancer. Now, when the guy got back to the institution and saw the doctor here, the prison doctor told him that he had diagnosed this as cancer a year ago, and he went through the guy's files and changed it and made it look like, you know, just a big cover-up. And then actually just a couple weeks ago, a friend of mine complained of chest and arm pains and was told it was a result of indigestion and a hiatus hernia or something like that. Despite repeated visits to the healthcare department, several weeks later he died of a heart attack, and that was just a couple weeks ago. And actually on Tuesday this week, our cook, who's had a history of strokes, had an appointment to see the doctor because he was having heart pains. And when he went to the hospital, they told him that his appointment was canceled. But on the following day, this Wednesday past, he went to the hospital asking for a blood pressure test and have his pulse checked, and told him that his heart was racing and he felt uncomfortable, but the nurse wouldn't let him in and wouldn't check his blood pressure and pulse. On Wednesday, he had a stroke on Wednesday night, the same Wednesday. He had a stroke at night, and they rushed him to the outside hospital. He came back today, and he looks very worn out.
So are you saying that the general level of health care has been deteriorating over the years in prisons?
I don't know that I could say that it's been deteriorating, because my experience has been that it's been horrendous. Earlier in my sentence, a friend of mine at Millhaven, John Hukamawa, was complaining of constant headaches, and he was always at the hospital requesting treatment. And repeatedly, he was refused admission to the health care department. When he would ask to be let out of his cell to go down to health care, he wasn't allowed out. I would often have to go and argue with the keeper on that day to get his cell open and let him out and let him go to the hospital. But when he was seen by the health care department, they downplayed his complaints and attributed the pain in his head to withdrawals from alcohol abuse, which was a very easy thing for them to say, because they felt that him being a native, he abused alcohol. That was their sort of bigoted way of looking at things. It turned out, however, after years of neglect, that John was properly diagnosed as having a brain tumor, and unfortunately he died on the operating table of a brain aneurysm. There's been a recent study on deaths in Toronto, and that indicated the death rates among prisoners are hugely disproportionate to the population at large. The study was performed by Dr. Ford of the Kingston area. He's been working on AIDS and HIV things within the prison system, and obviously out in the community as well. But one of the variables that wasn't taken into account in that study was the CSC practice of moving prisoners just days before the death, and thereby skewing the actual amounts of prison deaths in Ontario. And the purpose of this appears to be to avoid the coroner's inquests that are mandated by law when someone dies in prison. I hope I'm not too cynical when I think that that's why they do it, but I can't see any other purpose of moving someone just before they die, so that they die in a hospital as opposed to a prison. So a huge disparity in the infection and death rates of prisoners versus free people in is the epidemic of HIV and AIDS and Hep C. And currently the CSC is only paying lip service to addressing the harm reduction measures that they could take to reduce the rates of infection. There's a lack of availability of methadone and full-strength liquid bleach. There's often a shortage of condoms, dental dams, lubrications. There's also a clear resistance to the provision of clean and safe needles and clean and safe tattooing equipment. The rationale appears to be that the drug use is illegal, therefore the CSC is against needles, and tattooing is also illegal in prison, so they won't support safe tattooing. And the problems with these narrow-minded approaches is it not only criminalizes addicts and provides no it provides no increase in the rate of infection between intravenous drug users and tattoo artists and recipients. The opportunity for accidental infection is also increased due to the people involved in these activities hiding the needles to avoid being charged, and thereby uninvolved people can accidentally infect themselves by being poked by a dirty or infected needle. On top of these huge problems regarding the aforementioned CSC policies, the treatment of prisoners and parolees suffering from substance abuse and addiction is a horrendous. If any of you have tried to quit alcohol or any other drug, you know how difficult it is and how much support is needed. One only needs to look at how difficult it is for cigarette smokers to quit. And there's all kinds of cessation programs for smokers in the community. There's all kinds of opportunities to get medical help, counseling, join groups dedicated to supporting people trying to quit. But in prison and on parole, the response to addiction is simply to criminalize and simply punish the addicted prisoner. Paroles are pulled, people are thrown back in prison, and heroin addicts begging for help simply don't get it. So those are some of the problems that I'm seeing in the prison system.